Dinner for Two is brought to you by Vista. If you're a small business owner, entrepreneur, or have a creative idea, Vista will help you bring your vision to life. Through their professional design solutions and services and high-quality marketing products, you can build a brand you can be proud of. Visit vistaprint.com.au to start creating.
Hi, I'm Elise Tran, and welcome to Dinner for Two, presented by Pop Sugar Australia. I get asked a lot of questions in business, and one of those is, should I open a store? So if you're considering whether or not to go into physical retail, whether or not to wholesale to someone or, you know, just stay online, this episode will be really interesting for you. With TDE, I had so many customers asking to see the product in real life. And initially the business was in my dining room, so I couldn't really have people over. It was just a bit like too personal. Anyway, so from that experience, we decided to open a pop-up shop at Westfield Pitt Street Mall, and it was a raging success. It was 4 days non-stop, and after that, we were able to go out of my dining room into a proper office. That office around the corner from my house is where we took some appointments to see customers. We, you know, zhuzhed the front part of the office, made it look like presentable, had people through, but even that wasn't a sustainable path for physical retail. So then what we did was I pitched the brand to David Jones, and David Jones took a punt on the kid and gave us a short-term concession deal, and we opened our first concession at David Jones, Elizabeth Street, which was a raging success and enabled the business to grow in David Jones, and we opened a lot of concessions across Australia. I love that process of thinking about store fit-outs, building a team, working out the processes. It was just a really amazing way of bringing a brand and product, you know, to real life. We eventually opened some of our own standalone stores, and they were really cool to build and manage. I love shopping. I love seeing stuff in real life. Like, I love browsing through and seeing what my options are. And so physical retail is a really big part of how I think about brand. It's definitely something I'm going to do in the future with my new projects. And today I'm speaking to my good friend Adrian Norris, who is the co-founder of Age. Age is a wildly successful fashion brand. They've opened so many stores across Australia, and as I've read, 11 more coming. So I thought, who else better to speak about this topic than Adrian? Adrian, thank you so much for taking some time out of your busy schedule to come in here today. I really appreciate it, and I'm really excited that this is Adrian's first podcast.
Oh my God, I can't believe you got me in here, but thanks for having me, Elise.
I am a long-term fan of you and your brand, but for the one person that might not know what Age is or who you are, do you mind giving us like a really brief intro?
My name's Adrian. I started Age 14 years ago with my best friend, Edwina Robinson. And so I'd classify myself as an Australian designer and retailer.
So just to put some more context on it, Age is probably one of Australia's most prolific brands. I would say a lot of women who are interested in fashion own something from Age. It's just a beautiful brand that has anything from ready-to-wear dresses that are stocked in, you know, the likes of Motor Operandi, Saks Fifth Avenue in America, through to now an athletic line, which is super accessible for, you know, the young woman. So it's a really amazing, holistic brand, Age World even, as we would call it. So I wanted to speak to you, Adrian, about retailing and stores. And I know if we take it right back to the start, even like 15 years ago, I had read that you had like a boutique or something. What was that about?
I went on a different path to the way other Australian designers do, because I opened a store when I just turned 21. So I remember my parents, you know, asking me what I wanted for my 21st birthday, and I said, oh, I want a loan to buy this shop in Noosa. And I was obviously very confident. I don't know why I thought I could run a business at that age, but I did. So I bought a store. There was an existing store, and then I rebranded it and I started buying other international and Australian designers. And that's kind of where it all started. I bought a lease, basically, and the store was very cool on Hastings Street back then. And Noosa was going through a really big boom time. It was kind of the retail precinct in Australia, especially for a holiday destination. But there were no Australian designers there. There was no kind of Sassanby. There was no Subi. This was a time when Willow was big. So all of those brands I started buying, and then I was buying a couple of international brands.
Okay, so you're stocking other brands, the coolest things at the time, and I loved those brands as well. How then did you...
I nearly went bankrupt. Yes. I had no idea how to order things. I had no idea about cash flow. So
I love your parents and they were just like, yeah, go it to for me. It.
I have no idea why. I still ask them to this day. I'm like, what were you thinking? And I remember basically after 12 months of owning this business, I had no idea how to run it. I had no idea about the financial side. I remember I never even did like an end of day. So I would sell a whole heap of stuff and I'd kind of pack up my bags at the end of the day and go, that was really nice. Made a lot of money today, I think. So I got to the stage where I had no more money in my bank accounts. I had no more money on credit cards. I had money outstanding that I owed. And I was really on the line. And my dad kind of said, well, what are you going to do to get yourself out of it? I knew at that stage that there were a lot of people that I knew and young people were in Bali making clothes. And so I justified that if I could make clothes that I knew would sell, so that I always had an innate feeling for what a customer would want. So I went and kind of looked at all my best sellers and interpreted them. And then I remember my dad paid for the trip to Bali. He said, I'll pay for your trip to Bali.
Love these parents.
They're very generous now, looking back. But they said, okay, we'll go on a family trip to Bali, but your job is to make clothes. And so I went over there and I made a collection. I just made everything in white cottons and in linens because that was all that was available. And there was a lot of hand beading available then. And so I did that and filled my entire store with that.
So that's the Hastings?
That's the Hastings Street one. Yep. And then basically it was a sellout. And
how amazing. Yeah. So you're like 22,
yeah,
made some young clothes in Bali, put them on racks and away we go. And that is the start of age as we know it.
So I did one collection on my own. And then I did another collection, which was terrible. And Eddie was my best friend and she had been working in the store with me as well from the start. We'd been setting it up together, but she'd moved to Sydney to work at Rush magazine as a stylist. And I remember calling her up and I was like, Ed, I've done this collection and it's not very good. Do you think you can style it to make it look better? And so then we together redesigned the next collection. I went back to Bali, reproduced it, brought it back, and then she restyled it. And that was the start of how we started working together and how age kind of came about.
That's cool. So if we take it back to your first store, Hastings Parade in Noosa, like what were some things that you could have improved on there? Or if you were looking back and you're like, dude, do this.
I would have got a lot more experience with retail before I opened a store. So that was probably number one. I'd worked at Mark's before then, which was like the coolest store in Sydney at that stage. And I was really good at selling, but I probably didn't take any notice of the actual, you know, day-to-day running of the store. I was just the kid that ran around and schmoozed all the customers and sold. So I think that when I opened my first store, I had no idea about stock take. I remember I used to run it with my little brother. But I remember that over like probably a couple of months, we hadn't been folding anything when people had been trying them on and not buying them. So we'd go into the change room and somebody would leave three dresses there and me and my little brother would pick it up. Thank you. We'd go into the back room, open the door and just throw it into this pile. And this pile kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And to the point where someone would go, oh, do you have a size 8 in that? And I would very politely go, let me just check in the back room for you. And we'd walk into the back room, close the door, and I'd count to about 10 looking at the pile, knowing that I had no chance of finding whatever was in there. And then I come back and I go, I'm so sorry, we don't have that size available for you.
Did you think to call Mark? So Mark, there is a real Mark's guy, isn't
there? Yeah.
And you would work for him. Did you like think to pick up the phone and be like?
No, I wasn't. I had no idea that you could even ask people to mentor you at that stage.
Yes. Yeah.
I remember even just starting my business, I would be just pulling my hair out. I remember sitting with my dad going, who can help me? Like, how do I figure this out? And my dad's a dentist. He went, well, I don't know. Is there a university degree for, you know, fashion stores? I was like, nope. So, yeah, it was really hard.
If a young guy came up to you now and had opened a store, like what is there, do you know of anything now that people could use as a resource?
I still think there is not enough resource. I think with fashion designers in particular, you get pigeonholed straight away that you're this creative and so you create beautiful clothes and that's all the training that you get on how to make the garment and how to create the garment. But that's like 15% of it.
I guess potentially, you know, if someone is a young designer and they have, you know, they can make the clothes and they've been taught how to do that, you know, at a White House or whatever, I mean, next step could be for them to like get a job in just one of the age stores, see how that runs. You know, ask them questions of the manager, understand, try to get across how the business works. I mean, that's kind of like a realistic way of getting a sense check.
Yeah, definitely. I think probably now if I was going back, I would probably, no, knowing me, I probably wouldn't do that. But yeah, I think that back then it was a lot different. It was, there was not that, I think now there's a lot more kind of collaboration in the industry and assistance. And if some young designer came and wanted to talk to me, I would be the first person to sit down and lay out everything and kind of help them with a plan.
So there's this store on Hastings Parade that, you know, stocks your first collection. We're now in Sydney now, right, geographically.
Yeah.
So in this period of time, right, like a lot of people were online or wholesaling, but, you know, you're doing full direct consumer right at the start of the...
Yeah. Again, it was more just not really knowing what I was doing, but also kind of innately understanding that I needed to get my product with a consumer. And I think after, so we had the Noosa store, then we opened the Potts Point store, which was underneath Hugo's, which was very fashionable.
Yeah, very cool at the time.
Yep. And then we shut down the Noosa store because the GFC hit. And so we were again in a pretty tight position, and we had the one store for a number of years. And but we were wholesaling at that stage.
Mm-hmm.
We were kind of trying to wholesale internationally. We were wholesaling to little accounts. And again, I hit the wall really badly financially. I couldn't work out what was wrong with my business because I didn't understand a cash flow. So I went and taught myself how to understand. But then I realized that once I'd worked out the financials, I realized why I was in such trouble. It was because as a business that wholesales, you go and sell to someone and then they say, yep, I love that. And then you finance them basically for 3 to 4 months before you produce the clothing. Then you deliver it to them and then they're supposed to pay. Well, they're supposed to pay in like 90 days. They usually, at that stage, they weren't. So on paper, I had all this money, and in my bank account, I couldn't pay rent. I couldn't pay Edwina and I wages. So it was literally just the two of us working. And that's when I really reassessed the model that we were.
And that's so much earlier than everyone else. So, you know, it was only like in the last few years that a lot of Australian designers have come off that wholesale model into the direct consumer space. But you've been direct consumer this whole time.
The whole time.
And so then, you know, with these first stores and stuff, were you serving every customer?
Everyone.
Then?
So the, in the Potts Point store, it was Eddie and I because, and that was another reason we did retail, was because the rent for that space was the same amount as an office. So I said to Eddie, well, we might as well be paying for a retail place where we might get sales, but we would still work there. So we'd sit there on our little computers and then a customer would come and we'd really quietly put our computers away and serve them.
Just so incredible that that's where it was. Like, seriously, not that long ago, you know, like it's a 10-year journey, if anything, from that one store underneath Hugo's to now. Like, what are we talking?
I'm at 24 stores today.
Yeah.
So there's another 11 being built at the moment. With retail, I always knew that I had to get to a certain number of stores to break even financially. And then I would always discuss with that. I said, well, when we get to this stage, it's kind of like you unlock certain things. So if we get to 5 stores, then we would be, you know, slight, maybe cash flow positive. I don't think we were at 5 stores. It was probably about 10. Each store that I add unlocks a certain thing that I want to get to. I don't like to stay still. I find it so exciting to keep building and keep doing things. But obviously, in Australia, there is a limit to how many stores you can open. I can't keep opening an age store in every town.
Yeah.
A lot of brands are a lot slower opening stores because they probably, they do it differently. I also don't believe in knocking down stores. I believe that there are so many good shop fit outs that you can adapt and make your own as long as you have really signature items. So I'm one of the few probably businesses that takes existing stores. So I'll go and I'll see a store that might have closed down. It might be a different brand. I don't want to say.
Well, we can say this. Actually, Adrian has put in a fantastic pop-up taking over one of the old daily edited fit-outs.
Because, I felt terrible.
No,
I felt
it's
like
so fun.
I just abused like, your child.
No, you know, a lot of people don't know, but you know, when you build a store in like a Westfield or a Chadstone sort of shopping centre, there's this make good clause where you're meant to rip everything back out and strip it back to the bare shell that you got it in. And that's actually a really expensive process. So when TDE exited Westfield, we were able to leave the fit out there. And I didn't know what was going to actually happen to it. I was like, oh, maybe they'll just deal with it. But you've
it's
come
one
in.
Of our things. So we go in and we say to the centres, we're going to salvage what we can. They don't usually allow it for many brands because a lot of brands would go in and just, you know, put their own hangers on the rack and go, oh, yeah.
Call it.
This is, put it on a new sign. We don't do that. So we go in and we really, it's kind of like renovating a house. You know, you go in and you go, okay, what can I save? What do I need to change? But I also think it's really, in this day and age, we shouldn't be ripping out beautiful fit outs just because they're slightly different to, you know, the aesthetic that we wanted. You can work around so many things. And I think as part of a sustainability message, like ripping out glass and smashing it and then just putting in a new piece of glass is so wasteful.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And so that has helped with that rapid expansion because you'll take that on, you'll do it, you'll change up the colour, you'll put in different textures, but you'll work with what's there. Because I do, yes, the fit outs of stores are really expensive. They can be a few hundred thousand dollars for, you know, people who... You can do smaller scale retail, but like generally when
you
look at it...
Any shopping centre is going to cost you up to $500,000.
Exactly. When I was sort of talking to my friends about speaking to you, I was like, oh, back in the day I pitched to David Jones. So I pitched to David Jones, the Daily Editor, and also in the Roundhouse. I made it like a deck about, you know, what the brand was, like the press clippings, you know, influencers and celebrities that liked the product. And I sent one of the buyers a bunch of product and then he responded to my email and that's how I pitched the brand into that retailer. Did you go about it?
That was way more organized than we were. No, do you know what? For a long time, the major department stores wouldn't touch us and it was because we actually did things which were really different. So I remember David Jones passed up on us numerous times, told us to change things, and Eddie and I were really adamant that we weren't going to change what we were doing. And I think that that also spurned us into retail because when we were showing them wholesale, it was before, it was in the time when nobody was doing cottons and no one was doing linens and no one was doing leather and hand beading. It was all the stuff that we, because we were originally manufacturing in Bali, that's all we could make. We didn't have access to these digitally printed silks that a lot of the other designers were making. And so David Jones would come to us and go, oh, we need digitally printed silk. And we go, well, we can't do that. We do, you know, cotton and linen dresses. Mm. We didn't get into the wholesale, into the department stores for years.
Dinner for Two is brought to you by Vista. If you're a small business owner, entrepreneur, or have a creative idea, Vista will help you bring your vision to life. Through their professional design solutions and services and high-quality marketing products, you can build a brand you can be proud of. Visit vistaprint.com.au to start creating.
You can think about all these strategies with respect to physical, you know, your own retail stores, wholesaling, but at the end of the day, the product just has to be strong. If you've got a product that people love and your friends and family love, then your chances of selling it in a store or getting it into a major retailer will be there. It all comes down, I know we'll talk about all of these different things and different aspects of business, but at the end of the day, it's about how good the top or dress is, isn't it?
Yep. It's 100%. It's product. And I say it to my team all the time. It's like, no matter how good our digital marketing or our photo shoots are or our website or our retail store is, it all comes back to if that person doesn't like the dress or it doesn't make them feel good or doesn't make them look good, no matter all the other things you can put in place, they're not going to work.
Here I am watching the rapid expansion of Age World. Are there ones that do better than others and why do you think that is?
I think that when you look at having a number of stores, there's always going to be ones which perform really well and some that are kind of medium. I think that the beauty of getting more stores is that your cash flow becomes more constant. I think when you have two stores, if one store doesn't work, then you've lost 50% of your income for that day. If you have 20 stores and 15 of them are good and 5 of them have a bad day, then you kind of balance it out a little bit. And I think that sometimes you just can't predict retail. Like you can't control who is shopping or why people aren't shopping or why they are shopping.
Has there been a store that you've built that has surpassed expectations and you're like, oh, I did not think that
Adelaide, a few of them.
See, this is very interesting because he's being very secretive about where his top locations are. So if someone was to work that out, I think if they piggybacked off of that and opened something next door, they'd do very well.
A lot of people do that. That's the boringest thing in the industry is everyone is copying you basically.
Mm. Yes. Do you feel that happens with Age? I mean, you have such a distinct
product perspective?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, continually.
Really?
But you just have to let it roll off your back. I think it's, you know what, I get frustrated because there is so much work that goes in behind the scenes to creating something and creating a look and creating a feel. And there are numerous brands at the moment that just piggyback off the back. And you know what? It's not me. Mm. I'm not alone in this. It is all of us Australian designers who are kind of at the top. I just think if you're young and you're a designer, there are so many ways to be creative. You can always be inspired by something. I think that every designer is inspired. There's no original ideas. But when you're knocking off something that is 95% an age brand or a Zimmerman or whatever it is, and you're writing off the fact that because it's 5% difference, you're not going to get legally challenged by it. I think it's like, have some morals.
In terms of, okay, so that you've got the location, the fit out, and then it's that team. And, you know, a team becomes unwieldy huge when you do physical retail because the number of team members you need to run the stores, they're long hours, 7 days a week. So rapid expansion of team as well. And how have you kind of managed all of that?
I think that's one of the big things that has been a learning curve. And I have to say that I have an amazing executive team that helps me run that whole thing because it's not a one-man show. It's so easy just to give somebody a key and go, quick, jump in the store and open the doors. That's not going to equal sales and it's also not going to equal service. And I think that the biggest thing for age at the moment is service. It's not about sales. It's about how do we serve that customer? How do we find her the right outfit? How do we make her day better? Mm. That's how you actually start getting sales. If you are authentic to a customer, that's what counts. As soon as you find someone that is trying to sell something to you, it's like, you know, when you go shopping and someone is hanging off you trying to sell stuff to you, you just don't want to deal with them. Being able to engage with people outside of talking about the clothes is super important. I think that we have a big policy of, you know, it's not, oh, are you looking for anything? If anybody asks that, they're not allowed to work in the store. Yeah. Will we retrain them on how to talk?
Yeah, are you looking for something today or how can I help you today? It's
so
very
boring, isn't it? And do you know what? I would say 99% of the stores I go into, that is the greeting.
The brand and how it looks now, does it match what you imagined it to be?
I would say our product is so much better. I think when we started out, we were learning. So I didn't go to design school. Also, it's not just design, it's like how you actually produce the garment and, you know, the controls you put in place to make sure that it's made beautifully and it's finished correctly and it fits right and all those sort of things. So now I'm so proud of our product. I think it's world class in every aspect of quality.
What about that vision though, Blake? You know, like your amazing shows, did you ever in your wildest dreams think that that would happen, that you would say like a few years ago, Open Fashion Week and stuff, you know?
I kind of, because I always dream big. So I kind of did.
Yeah.
But the reality of it has met my dreams.
Yeah.
And that's a really special thing for Eddie and I to be able to see it and go, oh, when you have a dream and then it becomes a reality, that's super powerful.
Yeah.
I was really lucky that I started very young. So throughout my 20s, when I had the most energy that I had, could have, that was probably the toughest stage up until, I don't think we even started making money till I was like after my 30s. So that period where it was really tough was actually the time of my life when I was probably the most resilient.
Yeah.
And I just bounced back.
Nothing can stop you in your 20s. You just, something knocks you over, you get back up because you got no choice.
Well, that's it. Yeah. And I think that I also had so much extra pressure on, we talked about my parents earlier. Up until a few years ago, they were still the guarantors on all of our business loans. Mm. So Eddie and I felt a huge responsibility, like we couldn't pack up the business. And, you know, there are stages when you're just like, I'm so exhausted. But my parents' house was always on the line.
Okay, so you make this beautiful women's wear where it's met your vision, it's met the dream, which is just so cool to hear, by the way, like that you're living your dream is like so amazing. Men's wear. Why don't we make clothes for Adrian? What's the deal there?
Everyone always asks me this. Look, again, never say never. It's probably in the past, what I've done is I've learnt how to retail to women. And I really, I actually really love understanding what customers want, what a woman customer wants and, you know, all of her needs. It's just been the path that I've gone down. When I look at a man or I look at myself, I'm a terrible shopper. I wear the same jeans. I have the same T-shirts made by my factories on repeat. I mean, I don't think I've ever worn anything but a white T-shirt and jeans, realistically. And so when I always think about a business opportunity, I always go, okay, well, what is, like, who's the most likely to continually buy stuff? And in the past, probably men have not been as good at shopping. You know, they go in and they buy once or twice a year. I definitely think that is changing. I think the way that men consume now is definitely becoming more aligned with kind of where the women are.
But it would be quite cute if you had a matching shirt.
I don't think I'm that good at menswear. I'm good at womenswear.
Yeah, okay. In terms of menswear, I know you were saying you only wear white T-shirts and jeans and boots, but like, are there menswear brands that you like the look
of? No, but see, that's the other thing. I see the opportunity there. I find it really hard because I don't see many menswear brands that I would buy.
Mm. Where do you think retail goes in like a 5-year period? What does it look like?
Look, there's been, people have been telling me that bricks and mortar retail has been on the out for the past 15 years. I think there's always something really connected to a physical retail store. And if I look at it from my story, what our physical retail store allowed us to do was we created exactly the world and the range and the service that we wanted physically. And that has now allowed us to replicate that in the age world online. And I think that it has made us such strong omni-channel retailers. So I always say that the best way of gaining customers is a customer walking past and seeing you. That's the top of the funnel, because they've got your name up in lights, they've got physical stock to sell. That doesn't mean they're only ever going to be a physical retail customer. They migrate on that journey to become an omni-channel. They might be an only online customer after they first find you, but I still strongly believe that physical retail can be the top of the funnel and that you can bring people in on that journey and then take them through your online and omni-channel.
I totally agree with that. But then, like, in terms of innovation in the space, what do you think, you know, will change? You know, so right now you've probably got things like click and collect, customer databases running across both online, physical store, that recognition of customer no matter where she comes through. You know, if I'm shopping with you in 5 years' time, like, what do you think I'm going to be hit with?
I think, and this is a really hard one because you never know what is going to come in the future. But for us, I think service, but using service in like a really smart way, like understanding what top you bought, you know, the last 5 times, and then being able to predict and show you things that would go with it, or actually kind of going into that kind of psyche. Mm. I think that when people think of retail turning into a digital experience where you walk in and you look at a screen and suddenly the screen starts putting dresses on a picture of you.
Yeah.
I've seen it. It looks like crap.
Yeah. Just it's not seamless right now.
It's not seamless at all. You look like a clip art picture. I don't know. That might actually improve. But I think that when we talk about how digital knowledge becomes integrated with retail, it's about understanding your customer more and understanding maybe how they shop online and how they shop in physical retail, and then bringing those together. Mm.
Do you research and look at stuff like that? So, like, I like to investigate innovations in technology and how you can bring that into retail. Like even let's call it like 3D printing or something like that. Obviously, it's a bit clunky now, and you know, maybe do you ever, can you conceive a world where, you know, it's by now, you know, see now, buy now, print now in the shops.
Do you know what?
Yet?
I mean, never say never. I mean, I used to love the Jetsons as a kid.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm always inspired by certain things that came through in that. And they always say that science fiction actually is just a prelude to reality, because you see it and then somebody creates it. So never say never. I don't know what the technology is yet for creating a dress by pressing a button. But you know what? You never know. You do it.
Yeah, of course. So I feel like throughout this conversation, you know, we've gotten a really good idea on how you've evolved in retail and some really cool takeaways about fit outs and things like that. And so if someone was listening to this and were thinking about opening their own store, whether that be as simple as something like having a part of their office, a store or whatever it is, what are some things that you would say to them to think about, you know, to help them stand out? Like, it is,
you can open a store, but if you haven't got your product right, you're probably not going to sell very much. But on the flip side, I also think that getting your product on a retail floor and getting direct feedback from customers is the fastest way to improve your product, because if you go and put a whole heap of things out there and they're not selling, you've got to really reassess why they're not selling. So I always say to people, I would first and foremost open a store, because that's what we are as people who are designing clothes or making goods. You're trying to sell them. So if you can actually control that environment and get feedback as fast as possible, I think you'll be on the path to success.
So I love speaking to Adrian just then. That was amazing. If I'm going to take 3 things away from that chat, I guess if you are thinking about retail or wholesaling, it's a really great way of getting your product in front of customers and getting feedback to improve or reinforce that what you're doing is fantastic. Second of all, if you do want to do a physical retail store, it's not just about having to create a store from scratch and spending a bucket load of money. You can reuse fit outs, you can bring in furniture, you can get secondhand furniture to set up a store. And thirdly, it all comes down to product and that service surrounding product. Thanks so much for joining us for Dinner for Two. I'm Elise Tran.